Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Judges with Samuel and Saul. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. Samuel was the judge whom God chose, but the people demanded a king, and the Lord gave them Saul. Yet their actions in demanding a human king, when the Lord himself was already their king, were presumptuous and rebellious in the extreme, and the Lord showed them this, and they finally understood it. Yet their choice was made, and Saul was king. Now the new king had a matter to deal with. The oppressive Philistines were once again up to their old tricks. But God had an important matter to decide as well. Would Saul be the people's king only, or would he by faith become the Lord's king as well? So today we will discover the answer to that in 1 Samuel chapter 13, and we're starting in verse 5. Remember, Jonathan had raised conflict with the Philistines by attacking their garrison. And in 1 Samuel 13:5 we read, "Then the Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude." That's a Hebrew figure of speech, meaning they couldn't be counted. They didn't have the means to count them at the time. Of course, they weren't literally like the sand on the seashore. And they came up and encamped in Michmash to the east of Beth-Aven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid themselves in caves, in thickets, in rocks, in holes, and in pits. And some of the Hebrews crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed him, trembling. Then he waited 7 days, according to the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul assembled his army to fight with the Philistines at Gilgal. And he waited for Samuel for 7 days. Now remember, this goes back to Saul's important instructions given to him by Samuel before he even took the throne or was announced as king. Samuel had anointed him as the king, told him events that were going to happen that day in the exact order, in the exact way, who he would meet, what they would do, what they would be carrying, and they all came true. But Samuel followed that all up in 1 Samuel 10:8 by saying, "You shall go down before me to Gilgal, and surely I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and make sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you shall wait till I come to you and show you what you should do." So Saul had been told in his instructions for his kingship that there was going to be a time where he would go before Samuel to Gilgal. And he was to wait 7 days for Samuel. Then Samuel would come, offer sacrifices and offerings, and give him the Lord's instructions. Well, Saul had no idea when that time would come, but now it had come. And it had come while Israel was facing these 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and unnumbered foot soldiers of the Philistines. And all his army, Saul's army, were so afraid that they were hiding in caves and thickets and rocks and holes and pits, fleeing beyond the Jordan to the land of Israel to the east of the Jordan. And everybody who wasn't fleeing was trembling. And Saul's waiting. 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. More and more of his army are losing courage and running away and hiding and disappearing. His numbers are dwindling. 4 days, 5 days, 6 days. 7 days. And Saul is distracted. His numbers are down to a few hundred. Samuel still hasn't come. He's tearing his hair out. He's watching hour after hour as it goes by. When is Samuel coming? When is Samuel coming? And I think Saul is driving himself to distraction. And finally, the 7 days are coming to an end. The sun is setting on day 7. Samuel still hasn't come. The people are scattering from him. They're disappearing one by one. Verse 9. So Saul said, "Bring a burnt offering and peace offerings here to me." And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened, as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, that Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And Samuel said, "What have you done?" Saul said, "When I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash. Then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore I felt compelled, and I offered a burnt offering. So Saul finally decides, Samuel hasn't come, it's time to take matters into my own hands. So he has them bring the burnt offering and peace offerings, and he offers them himself. As if he was a priest. As if he had any right to do so. Now, even if Saul had priests with him, and he probably did, and had the priest do the burnt offering, the Lord's instructions to him had been specific. You are to wait for Samuel. Wait 7 days for Samuel. When he comes, he'll offer these offerings, and he'll tell you what to do. Now, I've heard people say that Samuel was late. Well, no, I don't think Samuel was late. See, Samuel said wait 7 days. He didn't say he would come within the 7 days. He more or less implied he would come when the 7 days were over. And that didn't have to be 1 second after the 7 days were over. No, it could be a few minutes or a half hour or a few hours. If Saul was a man of faith and was waiting on the Lord, he should just wait. But he didn't. Samuel came just in time to see whether Saul was a man of faith or not. And the answer, sadly, was not. Samuel asked him, what have you done? He had disobeyed the Lord, the Lord's instructions that he had given to him when he was anointed. The instructions that his kingship were dependent upon. And he says, the people were all scattering. You didn't come within the days appointed. The Philistines were all gathered. And then his religious excuse. I said, well, suppose they attack and I haven't made supplication to the Lord yet. I have to do these sacrifices. I felt compelled. Compelled to disobey the Lord. Compelled not to have faith. Compelled not to do what he'd been ordered to do as God's king. No, Saul. There's no excuse. Verse 13, and Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people. Because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. Then Samuel arose and went up from Gilgal to Gibeah of Benjamin. And Saul numbered the people present with him, about 600 men. So what does Samuel tell Saul? Well, he's done foolishly. He didn't keep the commandment of the Lord, the commandment God gave him at the time he told him he would be king. The commandment which he gave him connected with his kingship. Because of that, Saul's kingship would not be established. It would have been established if he had just obeyed, if he had just believed. The Lord would have made him king over Israel in perpetuity. He and his descendants, like he later did with David. But because he didn't obey, his kingdom wouldn't continue. The Lord would find a man after his own heart who would keep his commandments. Now, after telling Saul this, Samuel gets up and leaves Gilgal. Now, what had the instructions been, Saul's instructions? Well, that Samuel would come, make these sacrifices, and tell him what to do. But Saul decided to take matters into his own hands. Saul did the sacrifices himself, so what does Samuel do? He leaves. Saul has decided to do things on his own. Well, he's left to do things on his own. No instructions from the Lord. No promise of help from the Lord. No instructions what to do. Saul has decided to do things himself. Well, what does he have to do things himself with? 600 men. Against 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people like the sand on the seashore. Well, Saul has dug himself into a hole for sure. Now, Saul got out of this one. The Lord was gracious, and Saul had a son, Jonathan, who was a faithful and better man than Saul ever was. Would have made a good next king after Saul if Saul had been a believer himself. And God saves Saul and Israel through Saul's son, Jonathan. Though still, Saul's blunders still nearly lose the day, in spite of all God does through Jonathan. Yet Saul lost more that day through this incident than just risking losing to the Philistines, even though he didn't. He lost the favor of Yahweh. And next he would lose even more, as we see in 1 Samuel chapter 15. Samuel also said to Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and attack Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and do not spare them, but kill both man and woman, infant and nursing child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. Now the Lord's commandment to Saul is wipe out the Amalekites. Well, that's pretty violent, isn't it? Why did the Lord want that? Well, we'd have to go for that back to Exodus chapter 17. Soon after Israel had escaped slavery in Egypt, and they were traveling through the wilderness, we read in Exodus 17 and verse 8, Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, Choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, Write this for a memorial in the book, and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called its name, The Lord is my banner. For he said, Because the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. So when Amalek attacked Israel, the Lord was incensed and promised to have war with Amalek forever. Now, why was the Lord so incensed? We find out more about this in Moses recounting the event in Deuteronomy 25 and verse 17. When Moses says to the people of Israel, Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt, how he met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks, all the stragglers at your rear, when you were tired and weary, and he did not fear God. The stragglers, of course, might be the old, might be the infirm, the crippled, the very young, all those who couldn't travel fast, who'd be weary in the journey. Amalek attacked those and showed how little he feared God. So God says, Therefore it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest from your enemies all around, in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess as an inheritance, that you will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget. So the Lord wanted Amalek destroyed for this egregious act where he'd attack the rear ranks of the camp where all the tired stragglers were. And he says this showed that Amalek despised God. And God insists that they should be wiped out. He takes the task upon himself. He will have war with Amalek. Now, as bad as this is for Amalek, notice that it's something like 400 years later or more when he commands Saul to do this. So while the Lord promised to wipe out Amalek, he graciously waited before bringing about Amalek's destruction. He gave Amalek a long time. But now the time has come for them to be wiped out, and he commands Saul to do it. Verse 4, So Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. So Saul gathers the army in order to obey, apparently. Then verse 6, Then Saul said to the Kenites, Go, depart, get down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. Now the Kenites, remember, we read about back in Joshua 4:11. Now Heber the Kenite, of the children of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, had separated himself from the Kenites and pitched his tent near the terebinth tree at Zaanim, which is beside Kadesh. So, the Kenites were descendants of Moses' father-in-law, who had joined Israel at Moses' invitation as they wandered in the wilderness and then had been scattered among the Israelites in the land. It seems that some of them had scattered to among the Amalekites. And Saul warned these, Get out of there or you'll be killed with them. So they did. So Saul appears to be doing a good job. He doesn't want to kill any innocent with the guilty. Verse 7, And Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt. That sounds good, like he's obeying, but notice the next verse. He also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. Now, why would he take the king alive? Well, understand that back then, a warlike conquering king, he would conquer cities and capture their kings and keep them in his own house as kind of living trophies of his might. So it seems that Saul says, hey, here's a chance to have my own living trophy, and captures Agag. But that was not the Lord's command. He said to destroy all of them. And the king certainly was among the all. Notice what else he did. But Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. So they didn't even obey about the plunder. They kept the best of the animals alive, destroyed all the bad ones, but kept the best of them alive, disobedient to the Lord. Verse 10, now the word of the Lord came to Samuel, saying, I greatly regret that I have set up Saul as king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to the Lord all night. So Jehovah regrets his choice of Saul as king. Why? Because Saul does not obey his commandments. Saul has chosen to disobey. And so the Lord says, I regret ever making him king because of what he's done. Verse 12, so when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel, and indeed he set up a monument for himself. And he has gone on around, passed by, and gone down to Gilgal. So while the Lord is regretting Saul being king, Saul is so self-satisfied he's setting up a monument to himself. Verse 13, then Samuel went to Saul, and Saul said to him, Blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord. So Saul is so disingenuous that he meets Samuel and proudly acts like he has obeyed the Lord's commandment. Verse 14, but Samuel said, What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? And Saul said, They have brought them from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Well, there was a nice religious excuse. Verse 16, then Samuel said to Saul, Be quiet, and I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night. And he said to him, Speak on. And Samuel said, When you were little in your own eyes, were you not head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? So Samuel clears away Saul's nice-sounding deceptive words and reveals the truth of the matter. Saul is no longer little in his own eyes before Yahweh. He is disobedient, and his disobedience is evil in the sight of the Lord. That's the truth of it, the truth Saul didn't want to admit. Verse 20, and Saul said to Samuel, But I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and gone on the mission on which the Lord sent me, and brought back Agag, king of Amalek. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the plunder, sheep and oxen, the best of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. So Saul repeats his excuse again, as if this time it'll work. So Samuel said, Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he also has rejected you from being king. So Samuel pronounces the truth, that to rebel is like witchcraft, and that Saul is rejected from being king over Israel. Verse 24, Then Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Now therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may worship the Lord. What does Saul say? He says, Oh, okay, I sinned, but just forgive me, okay? Well, understand, to demand forgiveness is presumption. Nobody who says, well, yeah, I did wrong, but you can forgive me, right? Well, that person isn't really sorry for what they did. But Samuel said to Saul, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel. And as Samuel turned around to go away, Saul seized the edge of his robe, and it tore. So Samuel said to him, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today, and has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you. And also the strength of Israel will not lie nor relent, for he is not a man that he should relent." So Saul tries to keep Samuel from leaving and grabs his robe. But the very tearing of his robe becomes symbolic of what the Lord has done in tearing away his kingdom from him. Verse 30, "Then he said, 'I have sinned, yet honor me now, please, before the elders of my people and before Israel, and return with me that I may worship the Lord your God.' So Samuel turned back after Saul, and Saul worshiped the Lord." So Saul's true heart is revealed here. What bothers him about this? The anger of Jehovah? No. He just doesn't want to be humiliated in front of his men. He says, "Return with me, please, so I'm not humiliated." He cares more about what they think than about what the Lord thinks. Well, Samuel goes with him, but only to destroy what Saul refused to. Verse 32, "Then Samuel said, 'Bring Agag, king of the Amalekites, here to me.' So Agag came to him cautiously, and Agag said, 'Surely the bitterness of death is past.' But Samuel said, 'As your sword has made women childless, so shall your mother be childless among women.' And Samuel hacked Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal." So Samuel returned with Saul just to see to it that Agag was destroyed. Then Samuel went to Ramah, back to his home base from which he judged Israel. And Saul went up to his house at Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel went no more to see Saul until the day of his death. Nevertheless, Samuel mourned for Saul, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. So the sad result is Saul is rejected. Samuel mourns, and Yahweh regrets ever making Saul king over Israel. Now, it's very interesting as we follow the Bible record out that the man who is the enemy, the opponent in the book of Esther, in Esther 3:1, it says, "After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him in a seat above all the princes who were with him." And you know, Haman is the one who tried to destroy all the Jews. So this enemy in the book of Esther is an Agagite. The very man whom Saul tried to spare, his descendants, almost destroy Israel. Yet the Lord reverses it all and sees to his destruction, Esther 7:10. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided. And the Lord sees to it that Haman's descendants die too, Esther 9:6. And in Shushan, the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. Also Parshandatha, Delphon, Espatha, Paratha, Adalia, Eridatha, Parmashta, Arisai, Aridai, and Vejazatha, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, they killed, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. So the Lord did what he said he would do. He didn't forget the remainder of the Amalekites. He saw to it that these remaining Agagites were destroyed. And he carried out the destruction of Amalek according to his word, that he would be perpetually at war with Amalek in Exodus 17, verse 16. So the Lord saw to finishing what Saul refused to. But it certainly does not do to be an enemy to the Lord, as the Amalekites found out in their destruction. So Samuel was the last and greatest judge, but the people didn't trust the Lord's protection through him and demanded a human king. God chose Saul to be that king, but then he tested him. Saul had important instructions from Samuel to obey, but when the time came, he disobeyed and took matters into his own hands. The result was that he was left to solve matters himself. How often do we look to our own strength rather than waiting on the Lord? But our own strength is totally inadequate for the job. Let us learn to distrust ourselves and to trust wholly in the power of our God. Saul later was given an important mission from Jehovah. While he went on the mission, he disobeyed Jehovah's instructions, and Jehovah rejected him from being king. Do we sometimes think that partial obedience is enough? And partial disobedience will be overlooked? Well, let's remember, either we must serve and obey the Lord fully, or we don't truly serve him at all. These are some important lessons to learn from the sad case of the rejected king, Saul.
Saul.
Saul fails the test of faithfulness, and the Lord rejects Saul as king in Israel. Saul refuses to obey the Lord and spares Agag, king of the Amalekites. The fact that sparing Agag would result in his descendants almost wiping out Israel is a great lesson that maybe, just maybe, the Lord knows what is best for his people. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on Samuel and Saul. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Judges with the future of the Judges. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word more, you know and love God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We offer a free weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.